I think we're back. I have to off that break. I've always got to run to down the hall. Thanks, Case. Yes, we're back. I'm going to reach out for Scully and Hammer just introducing. Say again. Sure, you can run to the office. Yeah. No problem. Hammer's going to run to the office and let me pull in Scully and we'll see what hold on. Now you've got the without Hammer here. Hold on. Let me I'm handling the phone side of things. So there we go. All right, we'll get James in here, and we should also pretty well. Let's see, it's 9:30 now. They're probably a little bit away from scratches for here. There is a carryover. Not sure. Nick just texted me, and we're not sure if Nick's going to be able to join us. So I'm uncertain. I was going to have him. Carryover at Aqueduct if we can. So I'll find out as we go forward if he's going to be able to jump in for at least a quick survey of the carryover. 40,000 at Aqueduct today, pick six, and I also noticed. The fairgrounds yesterday, a number of multiple successes. Michelle Lovell with a couple of wins, Joe Sharp with a couple of wins, Deshaun Parker with three wins, and somebody else had a pair of wins too. So good, looked like a good day yesterday. Well, I think I hear James in the background. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be back on with you.
Well, and good to connect with you. I want to make sure, as I mentioned earlier to Scott, I want to catch up on leaderboard and all the Twin Spires activities.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the Kentucky Derby leaderboard competition going on right now. It's really, you know, this will be the second 50-point per 85-point total, but 50 points to the winner preps race. So there's still plenty of time to jump in. These next races in the series, we got one this Saturday. We've got four points races next Saturday. So this is still a good time to get in. We've got $100,000 in prize pool available. And, you know, you have to opt in at Twin Spires. We got a couple of VIP trips to the Kentucky Derby, $15,000 first place, $10,000 second place. It's one of our most popular contests at Twin Spires. So, like I said, go to twinspires.com, opt into the $100,000 Kentucky Derby prep race leaderboard competition.
There we go. James, some thoughts from you. We talked earlier with Jay and got some Tampa and Fairgrounds recaps in. Talk about, for those that haven't visited your Kentucky Derby trail recapping, some thoughts about what we saw in the Sam Davis and in the Risen Star.
I thought in the Sam Davis at Classic Causeway took a big step forward, appeared to move forward, improved upon his first two stakes efforts last fall, where he ran third in the Breeders' Futurity and then second in the Kentucky Jockey Club. In both of those races, he turned in solid performances, but he was no threat whatsoever to the winner in both races. In the Sam F. Davis, what I liked about that was that he took early pressure. It was a pretty solid pace. He was dueling with another runner, and then when Irad Ortiz asked Classic Causeway at the top of the stretch, he had another gear. He went on. He won really under wraps late. His ears were pricked, and just looked like he had a lot more left to offer. So that's a very encouraging performance by him. I thought that the Risen Star last Saturday at Fairgrounds was another really solid prep. I'll say this about Epic Center. I thought he took a step forward off of the LeCompte. I thought he looked really good that day, but he still has something to prove, obviously, having everything his own way on the front end. But it was still a really solid effort, and there's no reason why he can't continue to move forward off of that. So I thought it was very encouraging. He needed that in a sense. Smile Happy, I thought, was ridden for about the final 3/8 of the race. They didn't ask him for all that he had. And after being in a tough spot on the far turn, I thought he finished up pretty well for second and gets a loose on the lead winner. So that was a very solid first race back for him. And then Jandon, he missed the break. He traveled wide. Granted, he got a little bit tired in deep stretch, but another horse that ran well. So I thought the top three all, you could take something positive away from their performances. I've come away impressed by, I came away impressed by those last couple preps in terms of the horses moving forward, Steve.
Now, and this is the time. This is when we're supposed to ratchet up, the seriousness as we get some added distance. And, that's one thing. That's one thing about fairgrounds that we're going to continue to monitor with their revision of the distances. And of course, the Louisiana Derby is going to be a mile and 3/16. So it's an interesting, portion of what we're tracking as we pile up the points.
I think if the Risen Star had still been in a mile and a 16th, it wouldn't have gotten all the horses it got to ship in there. I thought that was a big part of the, it's really enticed those horses. It's a good example with the Rebel this weekend. There's really only one horse shipping in, that Un Ojo from New York for that race. A lot of mile and a 16th, one of 16th mile preps available to these horses at this time of year. And the fairgrounds, this was the third year they changed those distances, and it's really paid off last year, and then looks like it was a really good field last week.
Anything else from fairgrounds or any other venue that?
Yeah, I thought that definitely. Once again, I had written a piece last week. Those maiden races on Risen Star Day, they produced Mystic God, By My Standards. There were three graded winners: Caribbean Caper, Sainthood, and Mass Parade, that all ran last year in Risen Star maiden races. And I thought that Momentous looked really good for Pletcher. I thought both him and the runner-up for Asmus and Marsalis are potential future stakes horses, so I would definitely, I'll be following those horses closely. I love Momentous's potential. I thought Cyber Knight took a big step forward. For the first time in his career, he settled perfectly. When he made his move off of the far turn, he had his mind on business all the way through the stretch of the wire. I was just stunned in mid-stretch that when the jock Flojo took a look around, like for the competition, that was something that he could have never done in any of Cyber Knight's previous starts. That was a really good effort for that colt, considering he'd always had talent, but his maturity, his mental acumen was a real question mark. So I came away impressed by both of those three-year-olds. And then Olympiad is obviously moving forward as well for Belmont. You look at both Speaker's Corner and Olympiad, both those horses were completely out of action all of last year until August. They're both just getting started right now. I don't know how far either one will run, but both colts are extremely promising four-year-olds for Belmont, Speaker's Corner, and Olympiad.
Well, and I'll remind again, maybe we'll talk to Mike Welch in hour three. You've got Milliken and Reinvestment Risk both coming back tomorrow at Gulfstream, which adds to this weekly. It seems like every week we're talking about another addition to the handicap division, or maybe the elongated sprint types. We'll see what Ian Wilkes and what Chad Brown do with Milliken and with Reinvestment Risk out of that fourth race tomorrow at Gulfstream. And James, if we're kind of doing a survey, we should also mention, when it comes to the non-stakes performers, Bomb Diggity on Friday, and also that Burner Breezy for Matt Shire that won that Rachel Alexandra Light allowance on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very nice performances. And I don't know if you mentioned earlier on the show, Proxy is back today as well. There's another horse for the handicap race.
Amazing.
He runs in race 9 today at Fairgrounds. Proxy's first race since the Lexington Stakes last spring.
And I wanted to pull up the figure because I hadn't looked it up for either of the. Actually, I think I looked up Berner Breezy, if I'm not mistaken. Hold on here. Let's go back to Friday, and Hammer. Yeah.
No, I was just saying hi to getting the thumbs
to
up.
Jason.
On
everything,
to Jason.
Everything's they're all right. Everything good. All right. Berner Breezy with a 76 in that allowance and 1/2. And you know, it's funny. I don't know if Matt Shire, if maybe he was rethinking whether he should have run in the Rachel, given the way that race went. And Bomb Diggity, the Into Mischief, that won by half a dozen widening lengths and breaking the maiden, that filly, an 83 buyer. So two fillies, it does feel, though, like for the most part that the three-year-old boys are ahead of the three-year-old girls this year. Well ahead.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you look at that Rachel Alexandra. Now, Love Crate pulled up, and she was maybe the second or third choice in the wagering. But the top six betting choices, none of them were there at the finish. None of them finished first or second. So it was a race where it was a slow race. They're going to have Turner loose, and Goddess of Fire are going to have to run faster moving forward.
Exactly. And frankly, the Lecrette was going to need to speed it up considerably to impact that race or any of the three-year-old races. I mean, she came in, you know, well behind the top ones in the division. All right. From last week, let's turn attention to this weekend, James. And I don't know if you want to come straight to Oaklawn for discussion, or if you've got some other spots. I did notice that there's yet another 12 horse stake at Turfway. The Wintergreen? It's unbelievable. I mean, for those that are not watching what's going on at Turfway, I mean, every card is just filled to the brim with horse flesh.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and start there since you brought it up first, and then I'll finish with Oaklawn. You're right. They have the 1 mile Wintergreen Stakes at Turfway Park. It's race 5 tomorrow night, 8:15 is the post. That race, you know, is going to have a favorite in Breeze Rider. That mare has really done a lot of shipping. She's gone from Turfway to Oaklawn to Sam Houston in her last like 45 days. Switching back to a mile on the Tapeta at Turfway. To me, there's a little bit of pace in there. There's some other speed entered. I mean, I still respect her chances, but I have landed on number 11, Natalie's Charm, in here for Tommy Drury Jr. And, you know, the thing about this filly, Steve, is that she ran a big race in her career debut last year at Turfway, running a nose second in a maiden special weight. After a turf maiden special at Churchill, he sent her to Belterra to just get some confidence, get some wins in her. She won back-to-back races, ran third in allowance, and then she returned to Turfway Park. She's a four-year-old filly, and this will be in her first race. She needed the race off the layoff. She ran against Wayford Nairobi, sort of even effort, pretty solid. Last time out, Natalie's Charm absolutely looked fantastic, crushing allowance rivals, non-winners of three lifetime allowance rivals at the Wintergreen Distance, one going away by 5 and plus lengths. Really got solid figures. Her last out speed rating is one of the top ones in the field, and she is a filly that is absolutely on the improve for Tommy Drury, and I think she's going to get a nice setup with Malcolm Franklin at 15-1 on the morning line. She's the type of filly I'll bet to win in place and key her in some vertical exotic wagers.
That's a nice number, and certainly, if you're following the action at Turfway, the bombs fly.
J, Dave, just hammer here, Dave. Just I always love listening to your commentary. And we're speaking of Turfway and those big fields. I don't know if they're one in your wheelhouse or if you play them a lot, but I was interested how you play that track, just because of the situation, or if you do, or you pick and choose.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a little bit of pace handicapping always. I mean, it just seems to me, I mean, one thing about that track, Hammer, is that, yeah, I mean, you do have to pay a little bit of attention to these barns and jockeys. I mean, Gerardo Corrales, if you're playing there, you got to be a little bit conscious of what mounts he's taking, because he rides so well day in and day out there. But a lot of it just, you know, to me, it's handicapping at Turfway, it's just like handicapping anywhere else. A lot of it is like just paying attention to like how speed's playing, how inside and outside posts are playing. But, you know, I don't look at it as like being an extreme challenge. I just look at it as like I sort of approach it like I would any race at any track.
And that's what I meant. I should have clarified. Your wagers, are they multiple, more single type wagers, or are you a horizontal guy, or just?
Well, I'm always trying to like a little bit like be selective on my vertical type wagers. I am a horizontal guy, and I like to bet the win or win in place. You know, it depends on the value of the horse I'm betting. If I'm getting a good price, I'll bet win in place. If I have a strong opinion on a horse, sometimes I'll just bet it to win. But I'm always like looking to bet a horse straight, and then I'm a big horizontal type guy as well.
You know, you're very similar to me in a track like that, and some of the tracks that prices pop up. There's no problem going back to square one and betting to win, right? So many times, you know, a lot of times, if you're playing horizontals like I do, you forget, like, hey, you know, I really like this horse. He's 10-1. It's no problem. I can step out of the box here and go bet him to win, and you know, and not worry about it. But I'm like you, and I enjoy Turfway as well, and I'm pick and choose, and I find myself actually betting a lot of horses across the board, which I don't do at a lot of tracks. But you do get paid if you're right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should mention, by the way, before we move on from Turfway, because I didn't get this in during the week, the Dust Commander on Saturday night, Bill Morey, who is just deadly. Morey with Beatbox, even money favorite, an easy winner under Rafi Bejarano last week, $4. But Morey at Aqueduct and at Turfway has been really effective. Has made the most of his opportunity since coming east.
Well, Bill Morey, and it was, I think it's, he's Bill Morey, and the dad was Bill Morey Jr. It's kind of a weird name situation there, but I knew his dad well from Northern California when I started, and he was a tough old horseman guy, and you know, knew all the old type tricks, and obviously Bill came up under him, and so I think that sometimes those second generation horsemen, they just pick stuff up and they know what to do and the little things, and when they decided, he and his wife Liz worked for the TOC in Southern California, the Horsemen's Group, and actually, to tell you the truth, over the years was one of the only ones I could actually talk to that got the game. And you know, when we talked about schedules and money,
I remember that. That's right. Right? That's right.
And so it was like, oh, thank you. And we could sit down and, you know, have a friendly argument about where the money should go. And so they said, you know, we're going to go. We're getting out. We're going to Lexington and start, and they started from nothing, started at the bottom, and you know, have grown up, and like Steve said, boy, they've been on a roll, and it's not by accident. They, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Well, keep an eye, and that's his third stake win at the meet, Morey.
And he's ventured out into other territory.
We get in New York. He's sent horses successfully into New York as well. All right, James, where do we go next?
All right, well, then I'll just – and Maury had his first Kentucky Derby starter as well last year. But, I'll go to Oaklawn Park with the Rebel Stakes. I'll start there and work my way back, get a few horses on the card. I thought that Newgrange in his first two races was able to dictate the pace, Steve, and ran really well in that race. I thought in the Southwest States, you know, he didn't get that same trip that he got in the Sham. And, you know, he ran well to gut out the victory, but I'm a little bit worried about the way this race is going to set up. Once again, I see him having a similar type with that trip with that Kabod to his inside. I think it's going to be a solid pace. I really look at number one Kabod, and this is a horse that if you watch his effort in the Southwest, he just pulls Francisco Arrieta to the front. His speed has really improved in the last two races, and I think this race is going to have going to set up well. The way I'm going to play it is I'm going to play three horses and multi-race tickets, and then I'm going to bet a horse straight to win. Now, the two horses I'm going to use on my tickets are Barber Road and Dash Attack. I'm going to add both of those. I think both horses are going to run well from either mid-pack or just, you know, from further back, or both run well from off the pace. I think they'll both benefit if the track has any moisture in it. But my top pick in there is number 7, Ben Diesel. And he's a horse to me that has really shown some flashes in his stakes races, but has just not gotten the right trip in any of them, and I'm hoping for better tomorrow. I thought in the Kentucky Jockey Club he was between horses. He was like pushing it a little bit too hard early. He ran well to hold on for fourth that day. And the Smarty Jones, obviously, he just came winging it out of that gate from post 13 and was like actually showing the way early in there before tiring. I thought in the Southwest, he didn't, like, get out of the gate particularly well, but he got out okay. And then he made a nice, really solid run through traffic to be second in mid-stretch or in upper stretch, and then held pretty good for third. And one thing about Ben Diesel in both of those races, going off 4-1 and 5-1, I think he was a little overbet in both spots. I think after those losses, he's going to be a little bit overlooked on Saturday, and I think the price is going to be better, and I look for him to get a great four pressing, like, just off the leader's stalking trip with John Corr and run the best race of his life. And I'm picking Ben Diesel to win this, the Rebel Stakes.
And I'm reaching for the formulator numbers, because let's go back to that Kentucky Jockey Club and let's figure this out. Classic Causeway, White Abario, Call Me Midnight, potentially... who else is left from that list? I guess he would be, well, of course, Smile Happy ran well enough in his seasonal debut. But here's a potential for Ben Diesel, you know, not next out, of course, but because he's running both the Smarty and the Southwest. But here's a chance for Ben Diesel to become yet another stake winner out of that Kentucky Jockey Club, James.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's really been a case where... that race hasn't had a lot of impact on the Kentucky Derby. I know Super Saver won it way back in the day, but it looks like, at least right now in February, late February, a bunch of those colts that were in there are shaping up to be serious Kentucky Derby contenders this spring.
Very nice. Well, you know, one name that has come up repeatedly today is Dash Attack. There's no doubt. And I'm actually surprised that Chasing Time has not gotten nearly the attention that I would have expected here on the capping sessions.
I really expect him to be aggressive. I don't know what you guys are thinking, but I think Tyler's going to, like, be forward with him. And there's another horse that could just really be pushing the pace a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what he did, because I thought that was a really good effort last time by Chasing Time. I was just a little bit worried about the pace scenario. So I don't doubt anybody, though, who likes him, because he's the kind that, to me, is improving at the right time for a really good trainer.
Exactly. And, you know, we do recognize that the Asmussen team has, you know, been throwing a lot of horse flesh at the wall when it comes to this sequence. And we should at least note, and Hammer, I don't know where you stand, and if you've got much, any dap at all, actually, on the other two Asmussens, but I think before moving on, We should at least note Stellar Tapp comes back second off the layoff in here, and he ran okay behind Pioneer of Medina at Fairgrounds back in late third week in January with Rosario. Christian Torres is going to ride Stellar Tapp. This is a Tappet out of Joy Estella, who was a good, a solid turf mare for Christophe Clement. I mentioned this the other day. And then there's a horse that nobody's talked about, and that's Kairama, a Cairo Prince out of a big drama mare, Sadie B. Good. Namcook Stables bred this one, fetched 525 at OBS March. And in fact, we had a nice dinner with Jimmy DeVito last night, and we were talking about OBS. But Kairama is kind of a overlooked entity in here.
Well, yeah, you know that a buddy of mine was touting me last night on. He told me, he said, I'm going to bet all three of those, and he made a little bit of a case for that Kairama. You know, that horse led wire to wire in his first start, that Cairo Prince colt did, and then in his next three races, all stake races, he's just not getting out of the starting gate. I mean, obviously he has to break better with Giovanni Franco, but the point is that if he could get out of the gate a little bit better, he's looking at like a mid pack, like, you know, maybe even a little bit closer to that kind of trip, because he's shown more tactical speed, at least in last fall than he did in the Smarty Jones, his most recent effort, where he just basically walked out of the gate.
You know, interestingly enough, Kairama, like you say, broke his maiden effectively and then has come back in three stakes. Now, that they're in this region, there's plenty of allowance race that you can run in if you want to take that step. Maybe the ownership group is looking for stakes, but the fact that, you know, he's running this race instead of the seventh race where he could, take a little smaller step. I agree with you. The slop, I don't know if that helps him. You know, he was part of that wave that made that big run in the Smarty Jones. He was a little bit further behind. I agree 100%. He got to get out of there a little bit better and get a little bit better positioned. And, you know, he was wide that time. Maybe the inside post gives him a little bit better a shot at making a run late. I'm not a big endorsement of the horse, but I'm not going to talk anybody off him, that's for sure.
I'll tell you another horse that's in that allowance race that you referenced, race number 7, that on a 16th allowance for 3-year-olds. I know McLaren Vale's not going to ship in for Baffert, would have been a big favor, but still, Great Escape from the Rail and Sky and Sand off that maiden winner for Asmus, and are going to both take a lot of money in there. I thought it was a good move by the coach, by Dwayne Lucas, to drop back Ignitus back down to this spot. Because this is a horse that was showing speed last year in these maiden races, was racing on the front end, and the best race of his career came in that Smarty Jones, and it was on an off track, and he ran a really good third that day. And then basically, you know, he basically closed in that race to be third. And then in the Southwest, he just, you know, lost any chance at the start to even like hit the board or be any factor. He drops him back down into a 6-horse field. I think if he gets, I like the outside draw for him in this spot with Contreras. I think if Ignitus gets out of the gate and can stay in contact with the field, he's got a chance to drill these horses if the track's off. I maybe not drill them, but at least beat them. And he's going to be the third choice in the wagering. Like I said, I respect that third place effort 2 starts back. And, I'm willing to draw a line through that Southwest just due to the poor start. So I'm a little intrigued by Ignitus. You know, Dwayne Lucas, I really think Secret Oath is going to run a huge race for him in the Honeybee. And I was talking a little bit about these off-the-pace types in the Rebel Stakes. And, you know, Ethereal Road, I liked his maiden win. I thought it was a nice maiden win. I don't know if he can step up enough to be a factor, but it's always good to see Lucas on this stage and with 3-year-olds competing that are competitive at this time of year.
He's had a very solid meet, the Hammer, and 6 wins coming into the weekend, and 44 starts. So very solid, and his horses just have run consistently well. It is interesting that Ignitus gets first Lasix, and Blinkers go on as well in here. So there's a few things to recommend when it comes to Ignitus and the outside. It's going to come from a little bit off of it. You know, it's funny, given Lucas's Lucas's history, it's notable that both of his good, what feel like his good three-year-olds, Ethereal Road and this horse, they seem like they're both want to be from off the pace, at least lately. Ignitus did early in his career in those sprints. He was on the pace. And then when he is stretched out, he's kind of turned into an off-the-pace type. And I don't know if that's circumstance per se or partly the way maybe Contreras has ridden him too. There's a horse worth kind of a track and follow. Ignitus for James, the 7-5-1 in that seventh race, which we should mention, by the way, Hammer stepped away for a second. There are two pick fives. There's a middle, or actually a third pick five that goes from race 5 through 9. Hammer, I'm just mentioning we got wind of that third pick five tomorrow. That's been added.
Yeah, we added the extra race and a third pick five. So it's
races 5 through 9 starts with the Honeybee, where some people are probably just simply going to single the obviously Secret Oath. Then you got a claimer. Hammer, explain that sixth race condition, a claimer allowance.
It's a hybrid. No. It's a claimer with a condition. Have not won a race since October 26th. That's very common. It's not an allowance.
Well, the N1X designation.
That means the non-winners of a race since a
right.
Since
but
a date.
Typically, used on allowance
Like I said here, and we're gonna have Pat on next week. Pat Pope, who writes this book, and like I said, this is all dirt. It's three races. It's three basically distances here,
right.
And on dirt, you have to be so creative to come up with different kinds
right.
of races. So, you know, he'll have horses that have started for 12-5 in their last start, or last two starts, or have won since a date. So you really got to be creative in the different types of races. So rather than just have a plain old 12-5, which we do have, this just kind of conditions it out.
Well, and on that topic, and actually, I'm glad that Pat's going to have done it. I can't remember the last time Pat's been on with us. It's got to be 10 years.
I just talked to him. I said, you're coming on Monday. Explain how you do
it. He always says that then
he's coming.
All right. What's interesting to me about this is that I don't think you see this many other places.
Sure you do.
I don't know
if they designate it like that.
No, not with the N1X.
But you'll see it as
a C, you know, with the
condition.
A condition, yeah, or NC, or well, then, of course, there's the money. When you see the dollar sign, N dollar sign Y, and that's money won over the last 6 months.
It's basically non-winners of the year, but this is just non-winners since October 26th.
All right.
That's thrown in there.
Well, the 7th, for instance, is an N dollar Y. That's a money. Never won 15,000 other than.
Right, which is very common.
Right.
Or a claimant price. Or claiming. So either way. But no, you'll see. Guess what? When you start looking at the form tomorrow, you'll see it all over the place.
All right, James, let's get your last thoughts on the weekend.
All right, I got a last second play for you. It's going to be a fairgrounds today. I'm going to play against Proxy in that allowance race I mentioned earlier. Race number 9, number 3, Treasury at fairgrounds today. Grant Forster, he was cold last fall at Churchill. His barn is really heated up down at the fairgrounds. 7 wins, 27% win rate. This Treasury is a 5-year-old gelding, Steve. Just broke his maiden 4 starts ago. He has gotten really good right now. I like him on the front end today, 8-1 on the morning line. That's my last second Friday pick.
Well, we're rooting for Grant Forster. We had a lot of fun with Grant in New Orleans last week, starting with his barn's fabulous crawfish boil. That was the way we started things, and then Wednesday we had the fire incident at Bistro Orleans in Metairie, and they chased us out with with smoke filling the restaurant. So we're certainly rooting for Grant, and that's a good LSFP. The James Scully Last Second Friday Push. James, good luck this weekend. We'll talk to you Friday.
Thank you. Good luck to you guys.
Thanks, bye. James.
James Scully, everybody. James underscore Scully 111. And, of course, go ahead. You're good. There you go. And if we're in Oaklawn, we are lucky enough to meet with Jeff, and he joins us now for the... You know, for let's see, we second of three, I suppose, this season. Opening weekend, we had a handicapping session, and here's our second opportunity. We'll come back, obviously, for Arkansas Derby. Jeff, good morning.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Glad to be with you here. Welcome to Hot Springs.
For me, I mean, Hammer's been here.
Is Oakland.
I'm questioning that hot in this. I'll take the springs, but I haven't got to the hot yet.
Well, there was a horse, Cold Springs Road, right? Or at least there's Cold Springs Road somewhere.
There's a nice place in New York on the Hudson River, Cold Spring.
Cold Spring.
Yeah, great spot.
Yeah. Well, we want to warm right up, Jeff. Since we were together in December, how is this meet been different in terms of the ebb and flow and these three-day play weekends? I know the horsemen are a little off kilter in terms of, you know, dealing with it, and you had some missed time, some missed training. Talk a little bit about how the things have unfolded.
Well, it's a work in progress. You know, I don't think management or anybody thought that this thing would just be as is from now on going forward. There'll probably be some adjustments made, including for myself. 3 days a week is a little bit of a different type schedule. The three-day week, I feel like, is the new four-day week, Steve. We went through that transition from 5 days to 4 days. Unfortunately, logistics dictate with 35% fewer foals than, you know, 8-9 years ago, you're going to have to deal with less and less dates. I tell you one big positive aspect, and Hammers certainly can attest to this, is just the sheer numbers. If numbers are a big sign of successful handicapping and putting together good programs, Hammer, they've been coming out of the woodwork as far as the entries go, and I know from a handicapping standpoint, it's a challenge, but it also makes for much better value. So I think by and large, the three-day work week from that angle is working very successfully.
Exactly. And we just before you got down here, talked about Pat and his mad genius. We're going to have him on Monday to explain his method of getting this stuff together. And just tracking the field size, like you said, you know, started off in the eights, you know, in the first, just because people were just getting here and deciding what to do. And we've moved along, and, you know, we're a couple weeks, we're at 10, and so we're right in that 9.5. Which
it's
basically
a big number. Yeah,
basically,
I mean,
any track in the country would do it.
Well, they'd give their left arm for it. And I think with the exception maybe of Kentucky Downs in the fall with that little abbreviated meet that they hold, from a major racing standpoint, this field size is unmatched, I think, by anybody in the country. And the purses obviously have a lot to do with that. And it kind of creates a positive feedback. You know, you get large fields, you get more handle. That in turn raises the purse structure even further. So it's a good go. And, yeah, we'd all like to have a little bit more racing than 3 days a week, but what we have, Steve, is very, very concentrated.
I'm curious, Jeff, from a tracking standpoint, in terms of tracking horses and in terms of the opportunities of running back, because at this point, most of the horses that ran in December should have probably run back. But I mean, is the flow affected? I mean, in terms of, you know, there's nothing more difficult than for owners and trainers and for players that are tracking for horses than, you know, waiting for a race to come up in the book, or if it's in the book, training towards it, then the race doesn't go, and now you're waiting, and you're supposed to keep your horse sitting on go indefinitely, and that is not easy.
No, it's not, and it is a big challenge, but most of these horsemen, Steve, have been dealing with Pat Pope. You mentioned him, the racing secretary here. He just has a magical way of doing things. Pat and I first got together back in 1983, believe it or not.
Louisiana Downs?
He was the assistant down there to Louisiana Downs for 1 year, and immediately, he was a boy wonder then. Obviously, he's matured like all of us a great deal since that period of time, going on 40 years now, but he just has an innate ability to kind of get these races timed out perfectly. He has a you know, we talk about the memories of Steve Asmussen and some of these other horsemen. Pat is on the management side of that aspect. He doesn't forget a thing. He's a brilliant race mind, and we're certainly happy to have him here and have had him for many years. And I think the horsemen kind of get accustomed to different racing secretaries. Hammer, you might be able to shed some light on this, about how they write these races, the extras, things that come back, and it's always an ongoing process. You know, you've seen Steve Asmussen work through the years. I mentioned him to try to manipulate horses that probably are 100 deep in his stable. He can come up with them just off the top of his head. So, yeah, it's a challenge, but I think the racing office and the horsemen here work together as far as chemistry goes considerably better than at some other places.
Well, let's say the three-day week is a definite challenge just because of what Steve said, the less opportunities and the more. But I got to start off here with talking about the horsemen and the horsemen in general. They are here to run.
Yes.
I don't know if I've seen them meet. I've been, you know, Kentucky Downs here and there, and, you know, Del Mar's of the world and all that. But for an extended meet of, you know, that the quality is improving, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's not unbelievable. It's kind of the way it should be. But they are here to run. They come here. They know they're running on dirt. They know they're running 6 furlongs, a mile, and a mile and 16th. So don't bring anything. Don't come here and say you want a grass or you want to go 5 furlongs. It's not happening. So that helps. The less choices you have makes for horsemen not to think and to put their horses in. Since I've been here, this is my third year, the quality has, Pat knows this, and, you know, and when you're doing stuff, the management here has stressed, we want more quality. So what you're seeing now, you're seeing more allowance races going, and, you know, they might, hey, we want 10 in every race, but you're seeing some with 6 and 7 now go because, you know what, these races need to go. We need to break maidens. We need to run these maiden specials. We need to keep those higher quality races going, and they're happening. I don't know how many allowance races we had over the 4-day weekend. I mean, there was
it was just
a
remarkable
tremendous amount.
Yeah, and instead of a single allowance race supporting a stake, you know, on a typical Saturday here, you've got 3 or 4 deep, and again, this is all part of the stakes process as well. Like you mentioned, these horsemen want to run, and you need an allowance prep a lot of times to get into the next level of competition. So it is kind of a moving puzzle, a lot of working parts, but by and large, to bottom line here, Steve, to answer your question, I think it works, and I think you're going to see this probably more and more throughout the country. If they got some purse money to work with, obviously Oklahoma has plenty of that, but I think the 3-day a week with concentrated and higher quality racing is the direction we all need to go.
Well, and of course, at the end of the meet, the evaluation period, and you'll figure out what worked, what could be tweaked. Management will listen. The racing office will listen to, you know, to the horsemen.
Absolutely.
And make whatever adjustments make sense.
You know, this was, as we talk about, when you experiment, the time to experiment is when you don't have to. And certainly Oaklawn could have sat on their laurels.
Absolutely.
And just said, you know, we're fine. So you take a shot. And this is a look-see. This is what we're doing for the next 50 years. This is a look and see. There might be some adjustments. Next year you might see some more 40 weeks sprinkled out here and there after we listen. Maybe not. But it's a great opportunity of trying something and sitting back and saying, okay, what worked and what didn't. I know from a facility standpoint, meaning the casino and the hotel and the event center, it brings more attention to, you know, Oaklawn. It makes more attention to Hot Springs for another month or two, and I think that was part of the plan, and I think that was a success. Just, you know, having an extra weekend here, you could come here and go to the hotel, wander over the casino, come over and do racing. So that extended that period of time. So on that end, I think it was a success, and like you said, we'll evaluate at the end and see what comes up next year.
Yeah, By and large, I think it is far more pluses and negatives out of this. And again, you know, everybody would want to run perhaps a little bit more, but the city loves it. You get festival time coming in December now versus January, which is typically when the race meet has started in years past. And I just think it's working. I really, really do. I we're halfway through the meet now about, and I think it's time to evaluate and look at things in a hard way. And I just don't see nearly the negatives and compared to the positives out of all this.
Well, time then to start getting some opinions. Jeff Taylor with us as we look ahead to the weekend. And before we talk Saturday, you got anything today?
Just a couple of horses. Second race, I like the horse on the inside. the one horse here, if I get my pages turned, that'd be Shoo-Wee. Not a terrific price here for trainer Ron Moquette. This is an Arkansas bred race. Having been raised and born in Arkansas, I kind of look near and dear to my heart. Ron, also a native Arkansan, but Shoo-Wee comes off a 7/8 distance, which I love to see. First time asking, and then stretch into a route of ground. This horse obviously has no inherent early speed. He's going to be back for probably about 15 lengths as he was there in his initial start. Got some speed on the outside, some marginal speed in my mind. So I think the race sets up perfectly for Shoo-Wee. Hopefully 3-1, probably not, because a lot of people are looking at the same thing I am.
Very good. So you got the rail horse with Jose Santos Jr.'s Danny Cabrera, and we talked about this horse with Moquette on Wednesday. So that race, by the way, 2:29 Eastern time.
Seventh race, a little more meat on the bone here, 8-1, number 3, Mo's Mojo. This horse has gotten into be a bad gate horse. That concerns me a little bit. He used to have a lot more speed. He's been out slow in his last two. They're taking another rider change here with Mr. Contreras. He's a very good gate rider. I think if he gets his mind on his business for trainer Randy Morse, who I'd like to talk a little bit more in detail about that colt of his in tomorrow. But Mo's Mojo here, 8-1. He gets get out better today. I think he's going to be a player. He doesn't look like he minds the mud either, so clean break for Mo, and I think he gets a little bit better piece of it today.
5:04 Eastern, the seventh race, a starter allowance going 3/4. Mo's Mojo for one of the great characters around the racetrack, Randy Morse.
Yes, he is. He's
a live wire.
Yeah, he is that, and he definitely says what's on his mind.
I love it. All right, so there's a couple of Jeff's ideas for Friday. Let's turn to the big Rebel Day card. And first of all, when you get a forecast like we've got, and when you've had a cold weather spell with moisture, how does this track dry out? How quickly do you think it'll dry out, or can we expect kind of a tight reddish surface throughout the weekend?
Well, historically, frozen racetracks always are difficult to try to get a handle upon. It did not get as cold here last night as they anticipated.
Right.
It went down to about 27, 26, something like that. He was able to keep the racetrack loose. They did open for training late today, but they are training, and it looks like they're getting over it pretty good. I initially thought maybe we'd go start off sloppy, but I think he got enough water off of it. Our track superintendent, Kevin Seymour, and doing always a good job here. I think we'll probably open as muddy. I do see this racetrack at good by some point around mid cart.
Very good. And how does it typically play under these conditions?
I like speed. I think it's going to be tight. I think they're going to get over it. It just depends on, again, which part of the racetrack might be the place to be. It's not been the inside, at least not yet at the meet as far as drying out conditions. I kind of want a 3 or 4 path trip today, I think. We'll just have to wait and see. I said frozen racetracks always difficult to get. And it's not frozen, but thawing racetracks are always difficult to kind of gauge.
And this has always been a track that down inside it gets heavy, right, when there's moisture.
Typically it does. Kevin's going to do the best job he can, but you've got a lot of regular jocks. All of them have been here riding for a while, and I'm going to take a look at what Santana does, maybe a couple of others that Cabrera usually gets a good trip, and he knows kind of where he needs to be. But by and large, just look and see early on. I don't think I give any particular jockey the advantage, just whatever path I think seems to be best. They'll know when they get out there on it.
Let's dive in. Where do you want to start?
We can talk a little bit about the filly race. Lucas obviously the one to beat. I'm not going to try to beat her. I don't think she is just so strong, but Ugarry, I think, is a logical play in there if you're not a big Lucas fan, but she did finish in front of Secret Oath in the Goldenrod, a little bit different in trips. Your girl had a little bit better trip. I don't see any wild card in there other than perhaps Ortiz's filly, Ice Orchid. Pretty solid allowance or maiden allowance winner here on February the 11th. It looks like the longer she's gone, the better she's gotten. She needs to jump up about another 10 buyer points. I don't think she can get it in one fell swoop. She's a developing filly, so I'm probably thinking you girl is going to be maybe a race away, maybe Secret Oath and Ice Orchid in the exacta.
And you girl, we came up already a few times this morning, okay?
The Rebel, this is a... I put a little piece on the website. I do some work for the ADW, writing and analyzing these races. The Rebel, you either got to take two different angles. Either you think the Southwest was good, and that's going to be the majority of people tomorrow, or you didn't think it was very visually appealing, and that's certainly where I stand. I made my mind up about the 5/16 poll when LaGrange was out there full wide. Didn't look like he was going to get much, if any, of it, and he ended up grinding out the win to his credit down the lane. But they came home in 27, and that's just simply not racehorse time, not three-year-old good type racing time. So I'm going to toss to Southwest. I'm going in a completely different direction. You got the first five finishers out of there. If you didn't like the race like I didn't, that makes things a lot easier. That only leaves about six more that you really need to look at. And, you know, I mentioned Randy Morris's colt, Texas Red Hot. Dynamite work about 2 weeks ago, and Santana was up. He went out in 12, and that was quicker than anything else. Went six furlongs that day, and he did it galloping out. Santana was on board that morning. He takes the mount back. He's ridden three or four others in here, not to say that he would have first call coming back in this spot, but he ends up on Morris. The race, I think, is going to be in decent enough shape for him to maybe lay mid-pack and make a run. It's a lot to ask making his first start of the year, but the biggest factor maybe is that Kentucky Jockey Club, which we have seen has been so ultra-productive. Everybody out of there seems to want a big race.
Yes.
And I know he wasn't very competitive, but he didn't get absolutely trounced. He got beat less than 15 lengths. He has a race over the mud. He was successful doing that. Maybe marginally pedigree compromise, I don't really know, but I think he can handle a mile and a 16th. And Randy Morris is about due to really cut loose, I think, with a horse. And I think Texas Red Hot may be that other one. Conventional wisdom, chasing time. If you don't like the Southwest, I think he's the one everybody falls back on. Asmussen's colt. Gaffleon has a call to ride here. He looked very, very good in winning in his first start at round two turns, going a mile. He made the early advantage, relaxed, was relinquished the lead, didn't seem to bother him, but he surged home by seven, almost eight expanding lengths. And it's going to be very interesting to look at this colt. I think Steve maybe has a little something up his sleeve on this one, too.
You know, there's something very interesting about the fact that you bring up Texas Red Hot, and here we talked earlier with James about the Kentucky Jockey Club. That's going to be as remarkable a super key race as you're going to find.
You're exactly right.
Well, what catches my eye, and of course Eric Brim bred this with one of their Texas Red covers. You know, the Texas Red, of course.
Putting nice colt in his own red,
absolutely,
right.
And that has gotten some winners. I mean, he hasn't gotten off to a big start. What catches my eye, though, is Ainsley, the Officer Dam, who, if I'm not mistaken, was a nice turf router and a stake horse on turf. That's very interesting to me, because at first glance, when you see Officer, you don't necessarily think route or ground. But this is a very interesting pedigree. I can't help this horse. And listen, for Randy Morse, it'd be great for Randy to have a horse burst through.
The horse looks really good. He just tracked
wow.
to get him stretched out this morning, his legs stretching out. He looks the part. You know, I think he might be one of these colts, really, that makes that big move physically from two to three. And if that work is any indication, I think he's sitting on a big one. And, you know, we'll get every bit of 15 to 1 on him, probably even higher than that.
Well, I like it. I'm glad to hear it
wow.
outside. Because that was the dilemma here. That's what I wrote on top of my PP. Is history going to repeat, meaning is we're going to see what we saw, or is it going to be an outsider? And I like that idea. I mean, we've seen that. I've seen both. You've seen the same horses finish one too many times, and then you see, you know, I'm taking the goofball horse from the outside. Glad to hear someone like you get behind one of these. So we might be.
That's an alternate opinion.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
That's what we like. You know, you just don't know with those horses. Barber Road, I try to, you know, he ran good. Was it just because the collapse in front of him or not? I don't know. I'm gonna keep an eye on him. I ended up because of the track. I went to the last of the five just because of the track and the price and I think he might be sitting on a decent race here, because the pace is going to be a little bit quicker than it was last time.
So, and he's got, and he's twice a winner in the mud.
In the mud.
So it certainly wouldn't bother
him. Once the surface switched, I kind of went there. But I love that Texas Red deal. He was a nice horse, Texas Red.
And you know, Santana just owns this racetrack. And, you know, he's one of the few riders, I think, that makes a difference, especially in these big races. He's just the man. And for him to end up on Texas Red Hot, that's enough for me to push. And that work was very, very good.
Well, I one thing we gotta mention, because he was not an Arkansas bred, but a legend around here when it comes to Randy Morse, the great Jonesboro.
Yes.
Who was as tough and venerable as they came.
Yeah, he was a hard knocker for here for several years, as you said. But, yeah, Randy, a great horseman, and I wish him all the best. He certainly do one of these big races.
Jeff Taylor with us from upstairs, the chart caller, and has done a little bit of everything in this game. Who else are we looking at as inclusions or everything else on the day, on the card?
You know, ask Musin. I'm going to box all three of them his tomorrow, probably. I think Stellar Tap is also a pretty nice one, and he's going to have some meat on the bones, too. It's, Steve doesn't go down without a fight, and he will be well represented if he's got Kairama is also in there, so that wouldn't be a bad flyer.
That's the one that intrigues me, yep. Kairama, as the you know, alternative look.
Yeah, and he did have a legitimate excuse out of the smart. He didn't break very well. He was much more comfortable, I think, running closer to the lead. He was 15 back at the quarter mark. So he could throw a big one. It's just it's going to be an interesting race, Steve. I am looking forward to it. We can get the racetrack upgraded somewhere around good this afternoon. If we don't get any more rain, maybe we'll have a racetrack that's fast tomorrow. Who knows? But surface isn't going to make much difference to me, I think, as far as my picks go.
What else on the card tomorrow? Anything else?
There's some really intriguing maiden races. I'm going to probably reserve judgment until I get maybe, not the Clocker's report, but just a couple of other opinions in there. It's a great card tomorrow as far as betting goes, and I just really can't wait to get it started.
We'll probably see Alex Lieblong tomorrow, but I could ask him, but where is Hot and Sultry? When is, I know she worked the other day at 5/8, and I'm anxious to, I don't know if they're thinking fantasy and training up, or if they're going to do something more conservative with her.
I don't know. It's, you know, it's a big step, obviously, for a young horse. You know, Lucas is going to try to do it with Ethereal Road tomorrow, going from maiden, yep, to grade two. And it is. You just don't know how much you got until you maybe tried the deeper end of the pool. And Hot and Sultry, obviously, most impressive. Another Santana mount there that we need to mention. Big number she got off of that maiden win. But, you know, I thought we'd see her in the Honeybee, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I know the Fairgrounds has got a nice three-year-old program as well, and we may end up seeing her down that way. I don't know. It just much depends on Lucas. You know, I think we got six horses in this in the race tomorrow. Maybe one or two others are really marginal as far as their presence goes. But she's casting a long, long shadow, Secret Oath is. A long shadow.
Jeff Taylor?
I'm glad you reminded everyone about Santana. You know, not that he need reminding, but I mean, not riding for Steve, you know, exclusively this year. He's ventured into other barns, and what that's done is he could show he's still in top, he's still riding good, but I would look at his ROI is probably a little bit higher.
It is a lot higher. He's getting a lot of these 5 or 6 to 1. Ruben, his agent, finally having to do some leg work to his credit, and he has done some work. I mean, he is getting to some barns that Santana has not ridden for historically. I look here at Santana, and this is a good indication of where he is. Hammer, and you raised a very good point. I did want to mention this. You've got almost virtually a three-way tie here. Him, Cabrera, and Arietta, they got a 30-31 wins, all three of them. Look at the difference between their second-place finishes and Santana's second-place finishes. They'd run 30 wins, 30 places. Santana, 31 wins, 19 seconds. And that always is important to me, is looking at wins to second place ratios when you're a rider, because that means you don't obviously get on favorites. You're not settling for second because you're second best.
Yep.
It's either you're in or you're not. And getting on those 5 and 6 to 1 shots, Santana is doing the job. And I just love to see that kind of win to place ratio. And Santana doing it with bells on this year.
After a shocking period where where he was just, he couldn't get a win.
I hate to use the word poison, but I mean, he was
just, the craziest thing.
It was him and Steve both in that Keelan Fall meet. Yep. I mean, they just really couldn't get anything going, and it's good to see him back on his game. Santana, very gifted rider. I think we're all in the same boat there. And it's a game of streaks. We all know that. But he is riding with a lot of confidence. He's riding with some anger, and you always like to see that when it comes to race riding.
Well, we talked earlier this week. We'd like Irad Ortiz to tone back the anger a little.
But, you know, who else would you want on your horse?
You know, it's right. Someone who really liked the early beginning. Rafael, I always call him Rafael, Ricardo Santana. That early meet, he was happy to come back here to Oakland and into his friendly environs, that's for sure. But we had Jose Santos on earlier this morning talking about all his riders and the competitiveness here. Ramon Vasquez has had a great
meet. He's terrific.
Yeah,
right?
He's terrific. He's money. And Ruben used to have him, you know, here with Santana for a number of years, and they ran 1-2 in the standings, it seemed like, there for a period, and so he wouldn't get top call. But Ramon is he's another jock that just likes to win, and we're seeing those wins come in bunches now. I think he had a four-win day last week or the week before. He is starting to put things together, and he's always been just a great blue-collar, journeyman-type rider that does nothing but get the job done for you.
And he's winning stakes this year.
Yes.
So and you get prices when you price all these guys, because there's prices everywhere out there.
You're right there. No shortage of value.
I got to ask Hammer, I don't know if you're watching this. What is the decision on the infield for tomorrow?
No.
It's a no.
It is a no. I see they're
taking the posters down. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, this is one thing that you're doing it as a favor for the fans, because if it's not a no, they're still going out there, right? It's just going to be cold and white.
It is cold and it's wet. You know,
just don't want a bad experience out there. You want to open it up when it's – and then traditionally, don't get me if I'm – you know much more. This is the earliest Rebel.
Absolutely.
So Rebel's kind of – it was mid-March, and it was kind of like the reopening.
Spring break.
The whole deal. And so exactly. We tried to get that feeling going today, but it's still – the calendar still says February, so it didn't work out.
You know, this is Arkansas in February. We can't be too springy yet, I don't think.
Jeff, thanks so much. Get up there. Get upstairs. I appreciate it. We'll talk Arkansas Derby preview.
Pleasure,
all right.
Gentlemen.
Thanks, AT.
Jeff Taylor, he's on Twitter, but he's not active. Let's say that. All right, I did discover him on Twitter, but he's not doing too much tweeting. So that's great. All right, well, I tell you, I'd love having an alternative opinion.
Yeah.
And a horse mentioned that hasn't come up anywhere,
and for a real reason.
Texas Red Hot.
He's been watching him and the work and the whole deal and the you know the jockey angle is basically enough, and it's just, you know, it could be just one of those goofball races. It really is. So that's good to hear from Jeff. It's so good for him. I go to him when I need questions asked about, you know, track and this and that. He's been here for 20-25 years, and he's just a ball of information and gets going.
No, he's good. He's good. Let me.
So as it's funny you talk about taking the infield signs. We were going to sell the programs outside today, I think, and I see them wheeling them back inside. And the people here, they're so resilient. Not only the horsemen, you've heard me talk about that, the jocks, the fans. If they're coming to the track, they're coming to the track. If they got to bring an umbrella, they bring an umbrella. If they got to put the rubber boots on, they put the rubber boots on. Seriously.
And everybody's smiling.
Everybody's smiling.
Everybody full of smiles.
In about an hour, you'll see everyone here. They'll have a beer in their hand and be rooting a horse home. And now here comes my favorite teller. I told her she's going to Rosie. So she's going to work. Rosie, come on, Rosie. You're not getting by.
Well, you told her she was going to get a
yes.
She was going to get a visit. She was going to get a hello. She's waving hello. There you go.
You're the best.
Also, the best as we go down to Hallandale Beach Boulevard. Mike Welsh standing by. Welsh, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to have you back on the air.
Hey, Mike.
Rick Hammerly with us.
Hey, Rick, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And, you know, just listening to you, knowing you're in Florida, I feel I'm taking the gloves off.
It's a beautiful day. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but...
It's a beautiful day here.
Well, I'm sure it is.
You would have on the gloves and everything else. This is
I have six coats on probably.
Exactly. Your New England upbringing, that it's been completely wrung out of you.
Whitewashed.
Dips into the 50s. I've got three layers.
Too funny. I was thinking about you the other day, last week. I think what last Monday, the Beanpot. But I think the Terriers beat Northeastern.
You know, it's been so long. I really kind of stopped following it. But that's good to hear. Got to root for the old alma mater. Hockey back in that day was the Beanpot was one of the events of the year for sure. Well, it was like the Florida Derby year. You always went to the Beanpot. Couldn't miss it.
I think you just said alma mater. I caught a little bit there, so you're not quite done with it.
Yeah, you know, it's just a test. Your dog new tricks.
I love it. I love it. 1-0, the Terriers over the Huskies. There you go.
Good goalie this year.
Well, and I actually watched the part of the third period, and I've got CBS Sports Network on the phone and ESPN Plus, and they've been great with the college hockey.
I've got ESPN Plus. Is it on there? I'll watch.
Oh yeah.
Was that the final or the first round?
No, that was the final. That's over.
Oh, it was the final.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll have to wait till the NCAA playoffs then, and I'll tune in on them and see how they're doing.
We're on the doorstep of that too, Mike. I wanted to get to you for a couple of things. I mean, first of all, we've got Letruska, we got the champ coming back tomorrow, and good to get her in action. I don't know what you know if it's much of a betting race, but let's catch up on what's been going on at Gulfstream.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not a surprise that they really had struggle to fill the race. They've got seven in there. Really, the only one in her league is Crazy Beautiful. And, you know, from what I've seen of her and looking at her form and everything, I think she's probably a work away from being at her best, at least. I mean, she's only had three works since coming locally. I know she legged up on the farm in Ocala. But with only one 5-ace work, you're going up against a champ. You know, there's always that little nagging thought in the back of your mind after that Breeders' Cup exhibition that, you know, maybe she just got drained too much last year and not going to come back the same horse, or it could take her a while to come back the same horse. But the works look good. The reports are good. She towers over the field. I'd be surprised if she got beat. I guess I would. I bet her at 2-5 or 1-2. No, I'm coming out to watch her run, though.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just nice. You know, it feels like a bit of a luxury, you know, just to have a horse like this back for another year. It just, you know, at the age of six.
And look, Fausto's one of the good guys. There isn't a more pleasant guy to deal with back there from my side of the game. So you always root for guys like that to do well and do well with a horse like this. Nice to have him and her around for another full season. So hope for the best, wish for the best tomorrow, and moving forward from there.
Let's talk a little bit about the undercard, because there are some notable things, and that includes, I've been hyping the return of Reinvestment Risk, as well as Milliken in that fourth race. Here's another 2 4-year-olds, adding to what is an increasingly nice-looking group of handicap horses.
Yeah, this looks like another race that's strictly a two-horse race, and it's a little tough to separate them. They've both been away. I haven't seen the workout reports on Milliken. Obviously, we won't have any Reinvestment Risk because we don't have anyone at Payson. But, you know, knowing Chad off the bench with these kind of horses, I'm sure that he's got him fit and ready to go. I'm sure one of these two will win. They should probably run 1-2. Reinvestment Risk is already grade one placed twice. And, you know, on Milliken's side, they got beat a half length by Olympiad and then N1X going 7-ace during the fall at Keeneland. So it's another race. You know, it's tough to play it, obviously. It's maybe a free slot or in the early pick five, or maybe not a free slot. You're going to probably have to go too deep in there, but both first time over this track, so, you know, we'll see. But it just looks like they're leaps and bounds above the others, and I'm sure one of them will win. They'll probably run one too.
Well, and then we'll see where they go from there, how much, you know, how quickly they, you know, get back into a flow, and whether they're going to be, you know, sort of intermediate distance one turn types, or if they're going to stretch out. They're certainly, they're both.
Yeah, Milliken for sure at this point. Yeah. That's what it looks like, maybe. And I guess you could say the same for reinvestment risk. I mean, his only time around a few turns, he got beat off, but it was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, so I guess school's out there. But for now, I think the rest of the handicap division. The main handicap division don't have to worry about these two, at least for the time being.
Mike, talk about the two maiden races, and there's what I imagine could be a audition for a Florida Derby starter in that maiden group that's going to go a mile and an eighth on the dirt.
I guess, but it's a little late for that, I think. To go right from a maiden race win, assuming, one of these win, you're going to have to win pretty impressively in here, I think, to go forward to the Florida Derby. Especially like Todd's got so many other, Florida Derby potential candidates to go with a horse coming off a maiden win 4 weeks later into that spot. I'm going to guess you're not going to see anyone out of this race unless somebody runs off the screen, and I'm not going to think you're going to do that. But I thought the two Todds, obviously the ones to beat, complete agenda. Bad post last time.
Mike, we're losing you a little bit.
I was saying complete agenda. Bad post last time, hung wide early, held in there pretty well, got beat by a Bill Mott. A nice horse that I picked the Bill Mott that day. Yeah. His own the time before. So, and Pioneering Spirit, ran into an Al Stahl, even money, wire-to-wire winner, but at Fairgrounds last time, but like complete agenda. You notice the buyer numbers trending up, 63 to 75, 64 to 75. I think one of these two are going to win. The advantage to complete agenda.
Yeah. No good, Mike. Yeah, you're cut out on us.
That's a big advantage.
Yeah, just
you don't hear me.
Well, I do now, but you cut out
okay.
For a minute.
All right. You want me to go over it again?
Well, no.
I don't know what you lost me at.
No, I think
I like the two Todds in here.
Yeah.
With the advantage of the two being in the better post, but I think both horses are trending forward. Montauk Point ran a huge race, finished in front of complete agenda last time. Had a perfect trip that day. Another horse again. Moving forward, comes off a good work. Actually, he was on working with First Captain the other day, so that's a positive sign there. And among the others, Bourbon Heist way on the outside. That's a bit of a negative for him.
Well, and Dale Romans has got a pair in here, Strong White, as well as 10 Extra. And
Post 12 for Strong Light, forget it.
I would
even be surprised if you see him scratch. And 10 Extra, it's going to run better than last time. I think that race was a needed race. I could see him maybe hanging on for a piece down inside.
I'm just going to mention, because everything he's sending out appears live, Jose D'Angelo, Mike, is just winning with alacrity.
Yeah, no, he's become a major, major factor in every race he's in, and you can't throw anything out from that barn that shows up these days. Great numbers off the claim, just doing super well. So, I mean, this horse, speed, stretching out, probably going to wind up as part of the early pace, but I'll tell you what, if he jumps up from 35 to beat this field stretching around two turns for the first time, that would be a super job by Jose D'Angelo there.
Let's look at that nightcap, the 12th race, and you got a mile on the grass, and it's hard not to notice the two first-time Chad runners. Growth Capital for Seth Klarman, a $300,000 Warfront out of Room Service. This is Gary and Mary West's breeding program. And Thistle for Judmont. This is an Arrogate, homebred of theirs out of High Ridge Road, the Quality Road. And from there, there's some other intrigue, but start with the Chads.
Yeah, I haven't seen Mike's workout reports on those two yet. I did watch tapes of them. They worked together. I thought Growth Capital was the better of the two. Good-looking horse. I made him my second pick in here. I picked La Maguina from the rail. This horse ran terrific for last time out from a tough post. Got out game to the wire by the winner. Went almost head-to-head all the way. Now he goes from post 10 to post 1 with two races under his belt. So that gives him a little edge over the two Chads in here. So that's the way I went there. I picked La Maquina, and then I picked Growth Capital, and I believe I picked Thistle third. I might have picked Vocalize third for Todd, stretching out with a race under his belt.
Well, I want to mention room service, the dam of that Growth Capital, for those that remember this More Than Ready filly, Wayne Catalano for the Wests, and she won the American Oaks. Hammer, you must have been, I got to think, right, that was under your tutelage.
Yep. I also want to mention in the year Chasing the Crown, who's a full to Vasilikia.
Basilica.
Yeah.
But post 12, and that was Vasilikia, if you remember, started here running under a 16,000 claiming tag. Couldn't break
That's right.
Couldn't break a maiden here for 16, and then wound up, I guess, going to Jerry Holland offer, and the rest was history. Won a couple of grade ones, won a million and whatever. But, you know, from post 12, you're going to have to be really good to win from out there.
There's also the Stidham has got one, that Quality Road colt that the Jacksons bred out of Maraschino Red.
Father Red. The horse is training okay. If you see the report, you'll see he's been working with the same workmaker right along every week and been second best every week. Mostly on the dirt. You know, this is turf. I think they did one fast. A couple of Tapita works further back on the resume. But if this horse runs well, you get the workout report, and you'll see who he worked against, and you'll really want to keep an eye out for that one.
Well, and this one, what's notable, I see that Maraschino Red, that's the dam of Arrest Me Red, who won the Belmont Turf Sprint, and also the Aqueduct Turf Sprint. This has, and as a two-year-old, won the Atlantic Beach. This one has every right to be a nice one.
Yep, he does. But like I said, the workmate's been better every single time.
Interesting.
So on turf and on, Chipita and on dirt. So it'll be interesting to see what, I guess he looks like he's ready to run too. We'll probably see him next week, I would guess. Probably a similar kind of race.
Well,
hey, Mike, I got a couple questions just on the back on the three-year-old trial. I wanted to ask you about Kelly Breen's horse.
Who's that?
Kelly's three-year-old.
Was it Indu Time? What's the name of it? Indu Time.
Green Source, you said?
Yeah,
Kelly's
Indu
horse.
Time.
That Indu Time, who beat that American Icon in that allowance race a few weeks ago. Is he still?
He's still with you. He's training up at Calmettos. I haven't seen him.
Okay.
I know he's pointing for the Florida Derby. At this point, it looks like we're going to, the Fountain Youth, excuse me. At this point, it looks like we're going to have a pretty big field, so post position draw is going to come into play here. If that's the case, we could have anywhere from 9 to 12 from what we're hearing, depending on how works go tomorrow around the area. Some trainers will make some last minute decisions there, but that'll be interesting. If we get a big field, a few horses could have their chances severely hampered at the draw, which will take place Monday. And a great thing that Gulfstream's doing is drawing that card on Monday instead of usually on Wednesday like they do for Saturday cards. Give everybody a real big head start on handicapping for the big day.
Well, that'll be a blockbuster. And, it's great to see these big fields for these derby preps, isn't it, for a change? I mean, not to change, but it seems like it's trending everywhere. They're big. And I think that's because a lot of horses are coming back, right? They've only raced 2-3 times. They got to run, so they're in. And I wanted just to ask you, Todd, who's Todd's top three? I know he's got Mo Donegal, and he's got that Emmanuel.
He's got Mo Donegal is a question at the moment, I think.
Okay.
The Fountain Youth. Todd's got a ton of.
I know.
I can't remember how many nominated for the Fountain Youth. I believe he's running Emmanuel for sure. And Mo Donegal looks like is listed as a question mark. you know, Todd's going to try to pick and choose and keep them apart as best he can here. Again, if it looks like you're going to get a big field, you might want to put two in there to kind of protect yourself. If one draws bad, you'll let you have the other one. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him at least enter Mo Donegal and see what happens there. But I haven't talked to him too much about that. I think a lot of that decision could come in. Again, you know, when those horses work, and I don't know if they work today over there or they're going to work tomorrow for Todd. I know we'll have four or five of them working here tomorrow. We had five last Saturday and probably another five tomorrow, potential Fountain Youth horses, the same five.
That's great. And then the horse, just on Todd's, the one he ran in the Risen Star, that Pioneer Medina, you know, and uncharacteristically 30-1, didn't run too bad the first time in a stake, right? Only got beat 3 lengths or something, but trying to at this time of year try to follow you know what Todd's doing, and there's just so many would not be on the scene that he has, and he's breaking maidens left and right, and you just don't know which one's going
to
be that one.
How many this year? I think this year he's got even more than ever, and he always seems to have, you know, a ton of those maiden breakers and horses moving forward at this time. So we'll see how things weed out. Well, there's one horse in the barn, I can't remember which one, was the Workmate of that horse, and kind of held his own with him. I'm not sure. Again, you're going to have to look at the workout report. I mean, I'm still going through it, but I know I saw that name on there going through when I was handicapping the card yesterday as a Workmate of one of these horses that's in tomorrow. I think it's in that maiden race, in that turf race.
Mike, a couple of things, because you did write about Simplification, who heads into the Fountain next week. We know White Abario is waiting and for the Florida Derby for Safi Joseph, but a quick rundown of the major players in addition to Simplification for next Saturday.
Yeah, Simplification looked good coming out of it. I was a little surprised to see him work him that fast and that hard last week. I kind of hope he kind of eases back on him a little bit tomorrow. I don't think he needs to do that again. You know, we know he's fit. We know he's good. We know where he belongs there. Safi's got AP Secret. He's pointing for the race. I'm really intrigued to see him work this weekend. I didn't like the way he galloped out last week. He worked fast, but his gallop out was not what I'm used to seeing from him, so see how he comes back tomorrow. Dale's got a couple potential starters, Giant Game being one of them, in Howling Time. They'll both work tomorrow. I think he told Marty the other day, Howling Time for sure, Giant Game a question mark. Howling Time's been training terrific. The problem is, you know, he missed the start. He missed some training. He's a little bit behind the eight ball here. And again, a lot could be decided. I'm going to guess Dale may do the same thing, put both in, and if one were to draw a bad post, then maybe run the other one. But apparently everything on Giant Game is predicated on his work tomorrow. Kenny McPeak has got the Rocket Horse. He'll work tomorrow. I think this horse is going to need a race. His last work, I was just okay. I think he might be a work short coming in, but we'll see. We'll get to see him again tomorrow too.
And Mike, what's the status of Charge It, Todd and Mandy Pope's impressive maiden winner?
I do not know. I have not talked to him about that. Again, you know, he's at Palm Beach down, so I haven't seen him.
All right, we'll chase that down.
I don't even know if he was nominated to this. I'm trying to remember the list. It was a long list, and he had a ton of them. I'm not sure if his name was on there or not as one of the nominees, but he's definitely not being pointed for this race. I'm going to guess Todd's going to start looking at something else to head over to Tampa.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
He did not run anyone in the Sam Davis. And Emmanuel, if I'm not mistaken, was his Tampa horse earlier.
Yeah.
And he's coming here, so it'll be interesting to see who he points in that direction, figuring it's going to be an easier spot, and maybe he'll take one or two over there to get some points and get them on the Derby trail.
Finally, Mike, quick exit. I just wanted to note, Eddie Plisa coming alive, stake winners the last two Saturdays.
Yeah, and he's had a terrific meet. He's had a terrific meet. And, you know, Miles Ahead didn't surprise me. I actually picked him. I thought the way the race was shaping up, I thought Drain the Clock you know, might be a little vulnerable, even though he was training very, very good. But Eddie's horse just loves this racetrack miles ahead. And sure enough, he got the job done in the final 16th of a mile. So, no, knock on wood. And he's got another three-year-old, a real, real fast one. We saw him run off the screen. And, again, the name escapes me at the moment. But he ran off the screen here, winning an A other than last time. I'm going to guess he's going to show up next week in one of those sprint stakes. I don't have the nominations listed.
All right.
The cab horse. Can't remember. It's cab. It's something cab.
All right.
But that horse is as fast a horse as I've seen work around here in a while. I mean, he could really motor.
All right. I'd love it. I'm happy to see Eddie win the bunch of races. Mike, this was tremendous to catch up on everything Gulfstream. And I'm going to be able to get to Gulfstream mid-Saturday afternoon and coming over from here. And so we'll see you. We'll talk to you next week, but we'll see you next Saturday as well.
Okay, don't forget the mandatory tomorrow over there at the pool. Assuming nobody borrows Plaza today, it'll be a million plus tomorrow. So that's probably going to mean a final total of 5, 6, 7 million.
Wow.
So
all right.
It's a tough sequence, though. Very tough. Big fields, one Tapita. You better bring a satchel of cash to try to hit it. I think it's going to be formidable with those big fields and wide open races in there.
Unbelievable. Rainbow Force out. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch, of course. We'll see Mike next week and Marty as well. We got about 40 seconds, Hammer, to get everybody ready for a chilly but exciting weekend.
Yeah, it was good to talk to Mike. I hadn't seen him and talked to him this long in a long time. So we're here, and I think I turn around. I think there's sun coming out. That doesn't mean it's warming
up,
but it's brightened up, and it's fun to sit here as we sit here by the paddock, and the gates are going to open in about 30 seconds, and just to see the stuff going on. Here's our headphones come back from yesterday.
Oh, tremendous.
We thank you very
Look
much
you.
For that.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's called Southern Hospitality.
There we go.
Out for each other.
We're back with you on Monday right from here, and good luck, everybody, this weekend. I want to thank Jeff Taylor and Mike Welch, of course, and Scott Shapiro, James Scully, Jay Privman, and Joe Santos, Jose Santos Jr., who gave us a wonderful opening to this morning, and want to thank Casey, who has worked nonstop since getting out of the hospital. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday here at Oak Lawn Park.
Ford shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is